Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and of course we are always thankful and appreciative of you tuning into us. And got a whole bunch of stuff going on. I'm looking at my boards and I'm seeing some crazy stuff on my boards, but it's all good. At any rate, kind of caught a little bug, and you know, that's what they call it for some strange reason. So hopefully I'm able to hang in there with you for the full time tonight, but I am having a little problem with my throat. But I think we might be able to pull it off nevertheless. At any rate, we thank you all again for tuning in to this segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. And before we begin tonight's program as usual, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator, and we certainly are very, very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Okay, let's see. Of course, today is the fourth day of what is known as Kwanzaa, first fruits. And with that said, it is the day of Ujamaa. Ujamaa meaning cooperative economics. And so we want to talk a little bit about that tonight, and how we can not only talk about Kwanzaa or the seven principles at this period in time, but we want to kind of look at how we can make this a bit more productive throughout the course of the entire year. So we're going to open up the chat room a little later on and open up the mic for you so that we can talk about what you think we should do, what we must do to begin to bring in cooperative economics and all of the seven principles to a greater extent. We're going to talk about that, and also tonight we are going to talk a little more about community preparedness. We're going to talk with Mama Gail Cloughton and get a report on a session that she had here in Philadelphia that addressed the issue of Black community preparedness, emergency response, and also crisis. You know, how are we able to address those issues when they hit our community? When will we become more organized so that we are able to be more effective? So we're going to talk about that tonight as well, part two of community preparedness, emergency response, and so forth and so on. We're going to also talk a bit about the recent updates or developments that's pertaining to Phil Africa, and also give you a prison report and update on a few other things that we want to bring to your attention, which of course includes the numerous murders that have taken place in prison throughout the U.S. Now, Brother Razakhan hopefully will be able to call in very shortly. And he, of course, is the director of the Innocence Project here in Philadelphia. But he was able to obtain from Brother Mike Africa quite a bit of information, particularly some of the statistics on the deaths that have occurred in the state of Pennsylvania, in the prisons here in Pennsylvania. And certainly that situation is going on nationwide, but the question is, who's monitoring these things? Who's monitoring them, and who's investigating the murders, perhaps, but certainly the deaths that are occurring in prisons throughout the U.S.? Brother Ravikant also forwarded to me a very interesting article about a sister in Muncie Prison here in Pennsylvania. The article talked about how this sister was in asthma, a person who had asthma, and for whatever reason, she wasn't getting her medication. Someone gave her an inhaler, another inmate gave her inhaler, that inhaler, and for whatever reason, the sister was ended up in the hole as a result of getting someone else's inhaler. Needless to say, by being thrown in the hole, not having her medication, she of course died. So again, how many of these cases or how many of these situations are occurring? Because a brother or sister is incarcerated, should they not be given medical attention, medical treatment? We want to raise that issue and that question also. On the issue of human rights, we want to talk more about that and ask you, do you know your human rights? Well, whether you do or not, we want to let you know that New Day Resurrection Liberation is going to take on a new format starting in 2013 with monthly sessions that will be on specific topics but will be regular, such as community preparedness, such as prison reports, such as health. It's going to be monthly, ongoing forums that will cover specific issues. So with that said, we will let you know in advance the topics, especially those topics that are relevant to the platform issues for the Million Women Movement. And, of course, with that said, we remind you that the Million Women Movement is truly underway, and we are organizing, coordinating, or getting committees for the coordination of the reunion. Our reunion, of course, will take place in October 2013, along with our Amandala, which means power, convention. And, of course, we will certainly make certain that you get continued updates leading up to the event. Okay, let's see. There's a couple other things we want to bring to your attention tonight. Let's see, what was it? Okay, looking at our schedule, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to read a little bit of information that we want to share with you, a couple of letters, and so forth. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
And we're back. You are attuned to New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. And as indicated, my name is Empress Chi, and of course, this is one of the official internet radio broadcasts for the original Million Woman March and its universal movement. Okay, before we go to the letter that I wanted to bring to your attention, that's going to, you know, talk about what's going on in some of the prisons here in PA, I want to also elaborate a little bit on the topic that we're going to talk about tonight, part two, as it pertains to preparing our community for unexpected emergencies or crisis situations. Tonight we're going to focus on two areas. One, carbon monoxide. What we have learned, and again, we are very appreciative of Mama Gail, because she brought this to our attention. Carbon monoxide in our school, in some of the buildings that we're working in, and so forth and so on. How are we able to know these things? What can we do to better prepare? And certainly, once it happens, what can we do at that point? Well, we're going to talk a little bit about that. And also, asbestos. Now, I know that in a lot of areas, you know, the removal of asbestos has been pretty much, you know, especially in schools and other public locations. But has it really been taken out to the degree that you would think? We're going to talk a little bit about that, too. Now, that's not necessarily falling into the category of community emergency or preparedness, but we felt that it was important to also begin to combine some of the health things that are in our community presently, some of the health risks and some of the also things that we just aren't as aware of that we need to be. So we're going to talk about that. Want to remind you also that in our prison report, we want to begin to look also closer at prison reform, needless to say, but also needless to say political prisoners. We have to make certain we always talk about and continue the work in regards to our political prisoners. With that said, certainly there's always volunteers needed for the various committees, the Concerned Family and Friends Mumia Abu-Jamal, the Matula Shakur Committee, and so forth and so on. So we're going to give you a little bit of that information tonight as well. Going back to Ujamaa, Cooperative Economics, again, I'm going to tell you a little bit about one of the projects that we started here in Philly, and we do plan to take that nationwide, and that is called In the Black. In the Black has several components, but there's a business component for black businesses and entrepreneurs. How to increase the awareness of utilizing our dollars, our spending dollars, in a more productive, in a more strategic way, but also in a more intending way. How to redirect some of those dollars, some of the billions that is being matriculated throughout this country. So In the Black has been developed to help bring that about. So again, we're going to talk a little more about that too. Let's see. We want to open up our live line for you so that if you have a comment or a question about Ujamaa, how we can begin to develop black businesses to a greater extent in our community, that's going to be about our community, by the way, how we can create greater entrepreneurship from a conscious standpoint, how can we begin to generate those dollars that we're all spending, but having a portion of some of that really go towards the liberation, the justice, et cetera, of our people. If you have a suggestion or an idea, we certainly welcome it, and we'll open up the line for you right about now if you would care to share some of your thoughts about how we can bring about more holistic, more ongoing, more heightened or strengthened Ujamaa, as well as the other six principles. Okay, if you have a comment or question, please feel free to press 1 now, and we will certainly be happy to open up the phone lines for you. In the meantime, we're going to go to the letter that we wanted to share with you for tonight. This was a letter that was sent to us by Brother Razakhan, again, of the Innocence Project. And we're pulling it up for you right now, so please bear with us. Okay. This is from Brother Mike Africa. He says, on the move, Razakhan, just a quick note to my, or on my way through while sending this article and data I ran across recently. For those who don't believe that Pennsylvania and every other state in this country has an active death penalty that is employed on a daily basis, they had better pay close attention to these facts. This is a list of people that that have died in Greater Sisters since 1991. Okay, and then, of course, there's a list that's indicated here. And, wow. Okay, I'm trying to pull it up for you. Tell you what, give me a few minutes because I need to readjust this here so I can get the actual number. Okay, for some reason it's this kind of getting stuck. We're going to try to put it in another format, and in the meantime, just going to take a quick break, and hopefully we can adjust this file into another more readable one. So please bear with us, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're looking at some stats here that have been sent by Brother Mike Africa to Brother Razakhan. This is coming from Greater Prison. It's just one prison. And it stems from 1994 up to 2011. He's indicating that the ones for, of course, 2012 has not been released yet. However, with what we're looking at, on a yearly basis, it appears that approximately 25 to 50 deaths occur on a yearly basis. Give or take a little, because again, it'll vary in the year, but somewhere between 10 and 25 occur yearly. And in some instances, it increases. For example, in 2007, it increased. But the point being that who again is monitoring these deaths? Are these deaths because of so-called natural causes, or are these deaths because of some other reason? And again, these are some of the things that, as a community, we need to begin to investigate further. We're going to go to our live line, and I'm going to open up the phone lines for now. And again, if you have any comments about Ujima or about something regarding the prison, particularly the illnesses, the deaths, and so forth, we certainly invite you to do so. I'm going to open up a phone line, and I think this might be our sister Lanira that we have joining us at 4460. And again, family, please bear with me because I'm having some problems with my throat tonight. But is that you, Sister Manera?
Indeed. Peace, power, and progress.
All right. Peace. All right, my sister. Very good. And
happy
as we all say, yes, I was getting ready to say, avoid Ghani.
That's right. It's Ujima.
That's
and
right.
You know,
we definitely
trying to create, you know, and come up with a cooperative economic system that, you know, some people we can actually, you know, enlighten, and they would actually implement, and some people
just not
be ready for it. So, you know, I want to give thanks and honor to you, because like I said, and I'm always said that you always had the perfect plan for me, you know, and a plan of action in terms of doing for self. So I want to give thanks to you for, you know, enlightening me and you know, making my path much brighter, you know. So I want to give thanks to you. And in regards to the topic, you know, as I say, we building, you know, day by day in every kind of way, and we trying to reach the masses of the people to you know, implement the strategic plan and agenda that we have, you know, that you have put forward. So, of course, you know, I'm doing that. And just to say, you know, I think a lot of people now are beginning to wake up due to the fact that the crisis that we're facing with all these politicking people, you know, acting with this fiscal cliff stuff and, you
oh
know,
my gosh,
all
yes.
this other stuff that's going on that's distracting our people. But, you know, this is another thing, you know, I think as the government, you know, take his hand or pull the rug from under our people, you know, and it's sad that it takes crisis for our people to really wake up, you know, and it's just sad that they won't listen to the leaders who came before, you know, implementing self-determined self-reliance for such a very long time. And it's just sad that our people just really have to see that the government is not going to do for us what we need to do for ourselves. So hopefully 2012, this message to the grassroots that 2013 is a year of self-reliance, self-determination at its peak. You know, and we just need to intensify, implement and intensify, you know, what our leaders have, you know, our self-determined leaders have brought for us. So I just want to say I give thanks for you and, you know, studying all, you know, Madam C.J. Walker, you know, the UNIA, Marcus Sy Garvey, you know, Powernomics, which is an excellent book to read. Powernomics, you know, with Cloyd Anderson and, you know, all the unsung heroes and heroes who are self-determined and self-reliant. So just, you know, having you all, you know, and studying you all is just a blessing to me because I am definitely, you know, about doing for self. So
you know,
I just want to thank you once again. And about the prison system, wow.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and, you know,
yeah.
we talk about that all the time.
That's right.
And you know, that's another issue, you know, in terms of the monitoring and implementing new policies. That's, you know, something that I've been actually, you know, on the forefront working on, and also collaborating with Black Women Defense Lead and MWM in terms of intensifying and shedding some light on the prison issues and advocating, you know, for women and the incarcerated. So need not to repeat, you know, you just know that we are doing, and we just need to, you know, send a message to the listening audience, those who are not involved, that we need to get involved. You know, because I mean, it's some atrocious things that's happening to prisoners, and specifically women. You know, just
and on that note, hold that point right there, sister. Let me just share this with you. I don't know the date of this, but I know it happened recently, and hopefully we'll have Brother Razakai coming on shortly because he sent me this article. But check this out. A state of Pennsylvania prisoner killed by Wexford Health Sources settles suit for $2.15 million. The Wexford Health Sources and the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania have agreed to pay $2.15 million to the family of an asthmatic prisoner who died after her medication was denied at the State Correctional Institution in Muncie, and that's here in Pennsylvania. Erin Finley, 26, was transferred to Muncie on July 2, 2002 to serve out a 2 to 4 year sentence for theft. A lifelong asthmatic, Finley was dependent on the steroid drug prednisone or something for her survival. Dr. Craig Bordell, a Wexford employee, decided that Finley was faking her symptoms. Without even examining her, Bendel discontinued Finley's medication on July 15th. Over the next month, Finley made several trips to the infirmary, but medical several trips. Wait a minute. This is kind of hard to read because it's a copy and it's not good. Okay, let me try this. But medical personnel ignored her pleas for help. Okay, so let me go back. Over the next month, Finley made several trips to the infirmary, but medical personnel ignored her pleas for help. That indifference was documented in at least three sick calls requested in which Finley begged medical personnel to overturn the doctor's decision. The bottom line is, family, this woman died on August 2002, but the case has just been settled. So I just wanted to put that out there to you, Sister Maria. Now, if anyone would like to copy this article, please email us at nationalmwm@aol.com, and we'll forward you the article that was sent to us. Not sure which paper it is, because this is like this was something that was sent to us just today, actually. But I do see where you can probably go to www.theesleader.com is what it looks like. So we might be able to get a clearer copy by going there. But nevertheless, Sister Lenny, I just wanted to bring this to your attention. This woman was only going to be serving 2 to 4 years. But she's dead because someone decided she was faking her symptoms, even though she had asthma for a long time.
Well, it's not nothing that's new to me. You know, I done, you know, seen it and heard it, you know, and still hearing it. You know, and like you said, someone need to actually, have a serious watchful eye about, you know, the death that's occurring in prison. When you know of a person that's been in prison, that died in prison, you just don't leave it just as that, just dying. You better definitely do some investigation as to what happened and how that person died.
That's the question.
I mean,
meaning,
I done been incarcerated with people that I done seen, you know, how the medical staff there and how the prison guards and the administration turned a blind eye. You know, I done seen folks, you know, food get tampered with while people bringing their trays to them. I done seen all that. You know, I done seen people that I know that's, you know, mentally ill, that's been tortured. I done seen all of that. So, I mean, you know, talking to me about it as a person who can, you know, have firsthand experience and witness, you know, I've had situations where I was denied, you know, medical treatment due to retribution. And women in general, you know, we have special needs. You know, we need our annual pap smears, annual checkups.
Sure,
and,
sure.
Know, various different things. Women are being shackled while pregnant. I mean, there's so many things to talk about that happen to women, you know, and prisoners overall, people that's incarcerated overall. So, but we have these groups that's actually getting funding to do these type of investigations, and special masters from the federal government that's supposed to, you know, do all these things. And then, you know, I mean, it's not happening, you know. And the ones who actually, you know, raise the issue or, you know, try to do something about it, whether they inside or behind, outside the walls, you know, we're being actually outcast. You know, we're being treated as if, you know, we don't have a right to actually investigate and do prison advocacy work, you know.
Right,
so,
that's right.
I mean, you know, they look at us like we're the enemy. And in actuality, you know, these people are actually torturing. Like I said, prison is the second coming of slavery. It's slave labor, not only slave labor, but it's also a death camp. You know, it's a torture chamber. And I've been
right.
on various different, you know, and you know from coming down to Philly on a panel there, you know, we did a clip about stop these death chains, stop
That's
Max,
right.
stop Supermax
That's right.
and all that. And we talked about, you know, what was going on while we was in the hole and in prison overall, you know. So, I mean, like I said, and after that presentation we did down there, you know, this Stop Mess campaign is no longer, I mean, they exist, but it's not the way I expected it to be. I thought they was going to actually really, like, you know, stand firm on that stance, you know. So
right.
it's just crazy, you know.
And
I heard that whole
thing.
Stop Max campaign was disenfranchised, dismantled,
right.
you know. So,
you know,
I mean,
that's what we're talking about.
Crazy.
Who is going to now monitor and do the work? Because a lot of these programs that did exist are being, you know, they're losing their funding. They're being downsized
yeah.
or whatever situation.
Funded.
And of
yes,
all
that's
places,
absolutely.
Friends, you know, the community, the Association of Friends, that whole group, they had a national thing going on. The one
yeah.
in Philly has been totally downsized. As
it's
well
been
as in
funded.
Other,
you know,
right.
And you know, the prison, the prison project has been, you know, defunded and lacking funding, you know, and people just basically Bonnie O'Jury, and I'm still, you know, helping in every way I can,
right.
you know, in terms of doing my part, you know, but I mean, like, folks have just, you know, fell by the wayside. The funding is non-existent, you know, is this, and we doing what we can with what we got. You know, far as financially, you know, because we got to,
right.
you know, our own responsibilities or whatever. But it's just sad, you know, it's just sad to know, you know, everybody, you know, with this whole reentry thing and, you know, prison advocacy and Stop Max. And I mean, it's just sad to see how people are just, you know, I don't know, been bought, bought a soul, whatever they doing. I don't understand, but it's just crazy. But once again, you know, we doing our part, you know.
That's
and I
right.
I just give thanks that, you know, that at least after, you know, being out of jail 15 years and even before incarceration, you know, doing volunteer work at Prisoner Self-Help Legal Clinic and at American Friends at the Prison Project, you know, just doing something. And everybody who has, you know, family and especially, you know, people of African descent, we populate the prison system, you know, because of the disparities that's going on that's criminalizing our family, you know, our black family. So we should definitely, you know, take charge and do what we can and add a prison project, you know, into your organization. You know, if you have your own organization, you know, that you're working on, you need to actually have a prison project or a component that's addressing, you know, prison advocacy. You know, it's just sad.
Yeah, that's it. I just want to remind folks, Sister Manira, that we plan to bring you to Philly between now and March. I just happened to have recently met the director of the reentry program here in Philadelphia. And interestingly enough, he too is formerly incarcerated. So talking with him was a very good conversation because, you know, this is someone who had experienced, you know, certain things and is very interested in doing something real. And so I pointed out to him and to the director of public safety here in Philly that, you know, they can't continue to do what they're doing because obviously it's not working. Recidivism is still going up. And the results of the programs that they have obviously is not
unsuccessful.
It's not there.
Yeah.
Right. So they agreed. And so what I proposed to them is that they begin to look at some other alternatives and certainly some things that are a little more realistic, especially for our people, and they seem to be very interested, and particularly as it pertains to the women. So
definitely.
We're going to be bringing you to Philly soon, and so I'm putting that out there to all of our people tonight because this is something we plan to do on a national level, particularly as it pertains to the women. To begin to organize and coordinate our sisters who are what some people call ex-offenders. I don't particularly like using that terminology, but in order to get the point across, I'll say it at this period. But for real, we're talking about folks who are returning from being incarcerated. We want to organize the women and begin to implement the programs that we know can and will work, because Sister Manira has a program, Women Build 2. That is one of several that we want to have now for our women, and with that provide training. So, again, since I'll be telling you more about that, I have another meeting coming up January the 8th, I think it is, to begin finalizing how we can connect your project as well as Brother Bill and his wife, Sister Leticia, for the, you talked with them a few weeks back, a few months back, Opportunity Inc., which focuses on providing that training to brothers and sisters coming out of the, you know, the complex, as we call it. So I'll be able to give you some real concrete information on that after January the 8th.
Indeed. No problem. Well, I just want to say to anyone who's ever been incarcerated, you know, it would be a disgrace. You know, it will be a disservice for you to be incarcerated and to face all the atrocity that happens in prison, to come back out and to, you know, get back in that gray area and not reach back, you know, not reach back in the spirit of Sankofa, to go back to the cave, to the prison, to those dungeons, you know, where our people are, you know, and not try to do anything to assist. And not only that, boycott crime yourself, you know, like, I mean, because prison is not not meant for people, to me. It's not meant. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, people should learn how to be civil and do all types of civil things, as civil obligations in their communities, in their homes.
Right.
You know,
right.
so,
That's right.
I mean, like, you know, to come back out of prison after facing, you know, how the system is and not to reach back, you know, in some kind of way, you know, it don't even have to be financially to assist. You know, you can be on the forefront, you know, raising some kind of awareness, you know, coming up with some kind of policies, coming up with your own, you know, your own organization to assist folks returning home or incarcerated or at risk, you know. And
That's
it's
right.
just sad that so many people come back out of prison and just forget, you know, and then our people come out. And I think this is one of the reasons why a lot of our people come out angry and frustrated, you know, and come back out and, you know, and got so much animosity because, you know, their family, their friends, you know, and the community have turned their backs on them. So I'm saying,
wow.
you know, anybody who's listening, who's ever been affected by incarceration, please, at the sound of my voice, go back and reach. Go back. Do something. You know, prison policy reform, prison reform, something. Do something to assist.
That's right.
You know?
Absolutely.
Like right now, my whole thing now is the ban in the box that's just the legislation just got passed in Newark, New Jersey. I'm so hard on these politicians about implementing and coming up with an implementation team to really add some teeth to do something, not just have a piece of paper, a policy with dead weight. You know, people returning home can't get jobs, so they're banned in the box, which that's taken. Have you ever been arrested off the application for jobs? You know, and not only
yeah.
that. In housing, people come home, can't receive housing because of
right.
being incarcerated. So this is one of the policies that I'm on the front line right now, you know, for these politicians to strengthen, you know, not just let it be just a piece of paper with dead weight. You understand?
Right.
So, I mean, do something. And I'm the only person, like, you know, like, I see myself that's every other week at this council meeting, because these people do have the power to legislate laws, to strengthen laws. So, you know, hold them accountable, you know. Over $15 million that's been mismanaged in Newark for this prison reentry.
Mm.
You know, and it's just sad. Well, you know what you can do with $15 million? With our
sure.
mindset, you understand? And then I'm telling you, you don't have nobody who's can lead this thing by experience. We know what we want. We know what we need, you know? And you come in here
Absolutely.
Playing the games, you know, wasted $15 million of reentry money. And we
you know,
can
when
be
you get the
upset
opportunity,
about it.
When
you
get
know,
the opportunity
so
system in the era. I'm sending you, if I didn't already, I'm going to send you a meeting that I went to on December 22nd, and it's called the 400 House Drive. That's what the meeting was about, because in Philly, there's approximately 40,000 properties that are vacant, abandoned, and so forth. And so Brother Bill, who you met, and who we've had on the show a couple of times before.
Yeah, I've talked to his group, right?
Well, they have put a project together called 400 House Campaign, and it's to get 400 of those 40,000 houses.
Yeah, I've seen the email
that are here.
You sent me. I've seen
okay,
the email.
Now, so with that said, and again, this is what we're talking about. As you just said, there's not ample housing for folks.
coming from outside of prison. With connecting to the construction industry, training our people, we are able to provide housing, you see. So these are some of the things, again, that can be duplicated in other cities. And that is the plan. So, you know, we're going to talk more about that, what we can do to change those dynamics or to change those paradigms. And lastly, I don't know if you remember, I think maybe last week or the week before, we talked about how they're going to be closing, or the projection is, 37 schools here in Philadelphia.
Well, Florida closing also.
And Philly
so
is 37.
It's all over.
In Chicago, it's 100. But the point being, who's getting those properties? Many of those properties.
The hedge funds.
But see, we need to make
hedge funds. Yeah.
No, we need to get some of those properties.
Indeed. And
you know, that again
they have a funding the community block, and like I was telling the brother Bourne, the neighborhood stabilization funding. Now they have, millions and millions of dollars, and these were supposed to be to rehab abandoned properties. But under that funding, they were supposed to create training and jobs for people in those surrounding areas under the Section 3 laws. And, I mean, you know, these people is like, I don't know what it's going to take to bring them to their knees, but, I mean, I know we definitely need more people power. You know, it can't just be, you know, one person standing there, you know, and these folks just, you know, they roddy about all the other miscellaneous bull crap. But, I mean, you know, people are without jobs, without housing, without businesses. I mean, it's selective enforcement in businesses in the city of Newark. You can't even get an area, like if you wanted to rent in the downtown area, it's so hard because they got selective enforcement. If a business go out of business, you ain't going to see no sign because they got some insider stuff going on. Where, say, for instance, if a black person or a person of African descent want to purchase that store. I mean, there's so much undermining stuff going on that you wouldn't even know who to connect with. And then all of a sudden you would see the other people in there. You know, so, I mean, our people, and then the redlining with the banks. People don't even know that if a community bank is in your community, they supposed to, the Community Reinvestment Act, which is a law, that they supposed to help African Americans and people of color in that vicinity or people who live in that area with business loans, grants, and all of that type of stuff.
Wow.
Where people like Mons is focused on a whole lot of stuff. But anyway, that's exactly why we have this radio, you know, program that's giving you the information that you need to hear, you know, and to actually, you know, make a move, you know, step it up and you know, take the enlightenment and step it up and do what you got to do. You know,
absolutely.
The information is out there. We're in the information age. So anybody who don't utilize, you know, pertinent information, you know, I mean, choose your consequence. That's all I got to say. You know, if you don't be in the know, you know, then you don't know. Or you in the way, put it that way. So,
well, family, we want to also let everyone know that starting for 2013, the Many Women Movement now is ready to bring forward its Speakers Bureau. And, of course, you just heard Sister Manira. We have quite a listing of sisters from all over the country on a variety of topics and subjects that can now give you information, insight, motivation, and so forth. You've heard Susan Brooks on our show. Of course, she's in Cali. We're going to be bringing you other sisters because we want, hopefully, for you to support and invite our sisters to your city, to your school, to your community. The Men and Women Movement Speakers Bureau is now a service for you. So if you want more information, please feel free to give us a call or send us an email, preferably at nationalmwm@aol.com. Or, as I said, you can call area code 267-636-3802. We're going to give you more information about their Speakers Bureau as we proceed going into the year 2013. But I can tell you from A to Z, we got some serious sisters ready for you, including Sister Pam Africa, Sister Basima Muhammad. I can give you more names, but very soon you'll be able to go to our new website and get that information for yourself. All right, Sister Manira, give thanks, give thanks.
Right on.
I need you to come in tonight.
Also, my last comment, I just want to say 2013, I am up in the ante with the Million Women's, you know, Women Build 2 Education and Trades Foundation.
All right.
You know, it's a foundation now. We need to just take $300 a year to support a woman or at-risk youth. Of African descent, you know, to teach a building trade, you know, and like I said, building trades is not only, you know, in the construction field about getting your hands dirty. It's welding, it's engineering technology, it's computer engineering, it's all that type of stuff, you know. So, you know, don't think when you think construction that you see some woman like, you know, doing this dirty work. So, like, it's different levels of construction, and women should not, you know, set no limitations when you hear the word construction, because you can create your own construction company. We have a few women who own their own construction company, who have their own laborers that they put into work on jobs to build. So, you know, don't set limitations, my sister. So when you hear Women Build 2 Education and Trades Association, don't get frightened. Just get involved.
All right. No doubt. And again, Sister Manira will be coming to the Philadelphia area very, very soon. And for those of you if you're listening from another area, and I can see that you are, make sure you get ready to invite her to your city as well. We want to make sure that we begin to not only organize our sisters, but to raise them up, prepare, and to train them. In doing so, it can only improve our community. Sister Manira, thank you again.
Thank you.
Connie. And
of
course, onward.
Right on. Back was never.
All right, sis.
I thank you for helping rise me up and raise me up, you know. So, like I said, I can't thank you enough. And all the wonderful guests that you have that, you know, enlighten me and uplift my spirits and, you know, enlighten me to self-determination, self-reliance, and how to better myself, to better my family, to better my community. So I want to give thanks to all of you.
All right, my sister. And speaking of that, we have another sister getting ready to come on in a few moments, Mama Gail, and she always has a lot of powerful information for us as well. So with that said, my sister, I will talk to you very soon, and I'm coming to Newark soon, too.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
All right. Good thanks. All right, family, what we're going to do is take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Mama Gail Cloughton. We're going to get a report on an activity, event that she recently held here in Philadelphia, again, dealing with community preparedness, awareness, as pertains to emergencies and other kind of crisis. We'll tell you more about that meeting and some upcoming meetings because it's an ongoing process. Particularly tonight, we're going to talk about the topic of carbon monoxide. It's in our community, family. What are we going to do about it? How can we be prepared? And certainly, if the shit hits you, what do you need to know? So stay tuned. We will be back in a moment. You are in tune to New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation.
Thank you.
Talk with Sister Manira, and of course, as usual, always some powerful dialogue there. Sister's over in the Newark area, and of course, she is our coordinator for the Black Women's Defense League. And we're going to be doing some work in the Newark area to bring forward several of the MWM projects, including the Black Women's Defense League. And again, for our sisters in particular, we need to do more. We need to be more proactive when it comes to the issues of our women and girls. There are so few organizations, groups, or what have you, nationwide, that deals with the issues of our women and girls. Well, that's why the Million Women Movement is moving forward, connecting those dots, and making certain that we address some of those areas and do so holistically. Earlier, we talked about how a woman at Muncie Prison died as a result of not getting asthma medication, and that this was done intentionally. That the physician there was told, according to the report, said something about he felt that the woman was faking it when she had a history of asthma. The bottom line is, who, again, is monitoring these things? And when I say who, I mean, we already know the answer, but how many Black organizations, how many African descendant organizations or groups or what have you doing that kind of work? Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about Africans that are in groups or in an organization, because in other words, we know that our people are doing work, but I'm saying, from a Black perspective, most of these groups that do the types of things that are Human Rights Watch or Human Rights Report or what have you, are primarily headed up by non-African people. They have Black people in it or African people in them, but again, where are the groups and organizations that consist completely of people of African descent? Where are they? And so, you know, to answer that is really kind of sad, but nevertheless, we must and we will, but at the same time, begin to bring forward what we know needs to happen. And that's just one area of things, the prisons and so forth. When it comes to education, where are the organizations, the groups, the associations that is focusing on what's going on in our communities with education? Well, we know that they're out there, but what we need to now do is kind of bring some of that together again, because the situations are all over the country pretty much the same. We talked earlier about Chicago closing 100 schools. Detroit, already the city has taken over. There is no more school board, and they've told the former school board that if they meet, they're breaking the law. That's Detroit. It is now taken over by the public school system. Philadelphia is looking pretty meek. But fortunately, there are enough concerned folk who are bringing greater attention to what's going on, including, as we said earlier, carbon monoxide in the schools. Well, there are several issues that are confronting us here in Philadelphia, as in other cities, about schools. But what we're going to do now is go to our live line, and we're going to talk with Mama Gail Cloughton, who is very, very, very involved in what's going on in the school system here in Philadelphia, and recently had a meeting at the Pepper elementary school, I think it is, or middle school, I'm not sure, but it is one of the schools here in Philadelphia. And it was a meeting that was to begin to bring greater awareness to some health issues in school. But on that note, we would also share with you that recently it was announced Philadelphia will have a machine accessible to students for them to be able to get their condoms. We're going to talk a little bit about that, too. At any rate, let's go to our live line now. And joining us is Mama Gail Clowden, who, of course, has a agency or a organization that she herself has had formulated some years ago. But aside of that, she's known here in the community as an activist, a healer, and, you know, just a downright or plain up, straight up mother, period, you know, and taking the position that the children in all of our schools here are her children. So without further ado, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to talk with Mama Gail Clowden about the recent events or activity that was held at Pepper School and some other things, again, including condoms now in the public school readily available to the students. Why is that happening? For real. Well, at any rate, let's go to our live line, and joining us now should be Mama Gail.
Peace and love, family.
And greetings, my sister.
Greetings.
Thank you for taking the time to join us tonight.
No problem. It was interesting just listening. I try to take things in dosages because it's just so much now.
Yes, it is.
It is just so much, and when I listen, you know, it takes me back, and I think about what our ancestors, as I'm preparing now, I think about them and what they had to endure. And, you know, as we prepare for the new year, and, you know, we do the walk with the ancestors now every January 1st, and to honor them, you know, the memory and the strength that they had to endure for us to be born. And as I'm listening, it's like I know that we have everything that we need to get the job done. You know, if they could survive what they went through, we can fix this thing. But it means coming together like never before. And this is the perfect time to do it because the planets have aligned, you know, with the pyramids. I mean, there is an alignment that has taken place in the universe that is so incredible, and it's said that it happens every 2,737 years. And we're alive at this time to bear witness to it. And so I'm excited always about the possibilities, always. And as I listen to you, I know that things are happening on many different levels all at the same time, but there are people on all those levels. And now it just seems to me that this is the perfect time, as you said, to come together. In the Philadelphia school system, as you and I spoke recently, here it is 20 years ago. And I looked at a document that I got from a teacher 20 years ago, it was 1993, when she wrote a letter to the school board and gave me a copy of it. And at that time, people had come into the school system and was giving our children all kinds of crazy, crazy information. And it was at a period where there was this massive push to get homosexuality information into our schools. And they did, and they pushed very hard for it. And that was around the time there were clinics being put in our schools. And they had done something that I had never seen before, in that they said if parents did not sign a form and send it back, their child was automatically a member of the clinic. And it sounds like that's the kind of thing that is planned this time for the condoms. If they don't hear from the parents, it means that they have opted in. And, you know, for some parents, they might not even know that their children will be able to get condoms. And I don't know, we were reading some information from different places, and it seemed that some information, I'm not sure if it was Philadelphia or how that's even going to be, they're going to be distributed. I'm not sure, but some place we were reading, they were actually talking about putting them outside the nurse's station. So I'm not sure, especially at a time where in many of our schools we don't even have nurses anymore because they laid them off. So I'm not sure how the condom distribution is going to take place, and I'm not sure how they're planning to tell parents. We read the other night that some places middle school children will be given condoms. I'm not sure about Philadelphia because I hadn't even heard it except, something I heard briefly on the news about condom distributions, but, you know, I didn't get a full story. I haven't heard, and I'm at the school board. We have a school reform commission now, not a school board. So I'm at the school reform commission meetings, and I haven't heard it brought up yet. I haven't, because, and I probably haven't heard it, because we've been so inundated with the school closing information and trying to make the meetings. And it got so crazy right before Christmas that there were meetings like every day or every night. There were meetings about the school closings. And so I found it quite curious that they would choose right before Christmas to tell everybody.
Yeah.
And for our children, I really felt bad because this, you know, is the holiday season, and I know how upset children got last year when there were changes with their teachers. And I just kept thinking, having visited some of the schools and listening to the I don't care attitudes that I heard from, you know, high schoolers, what's the use? You know, that was the term that I kept hearing. What's the use?
Right.
The school is going to close anyway. What's the use? And I'm thinking, even with, you know, going to visit schools and listening to attitudes even of adults, I went into some schools and went to the counter, and I'm like, hello, you know, school's open today, you know. I'm there at the counter, and you know, people are walking around like they're in a daze. And I'm thinking, here it is. This was December. We still have school until June, regardless of what's going to happen after June. You're supposed to be working from now till June. So could we have some service at the counter? I mean, it's just amazing what's going on. There are some other things going on in Philadelphia as well. With race, I'm getting calls from a particular school, and there's some race issues going on. And so there's a lot of stuff going on at the same time. And, you know, our schools are predominantly black, but the predominant group that's teaching is Caucasian. And so there's some misconceptions, I think, by some of the new teachers that are coming in. And so we're going to have to help them to understand how to treat our children.
Wow.
So it's a lot of things at the same time. You know, we know there are myriads of things, but at the same time with education, that's very, very alarming. When we think about the conversation has been charter school versus public school. That's been the conversation. People are saying, well, the charter schools are taking over. You know, they're taking the seats from the school district. And I think that what people have to look at is I think that, yes, it's true that children and parents are opting to go to charter schools. However, if you work on the public school, you can win them back. Because 20 years ago when I began doing research, it was called choice in education that they were talking about, the voucher system. And at that time, there were different places that were trying this new system. And I believe Milwaukee was one of the places. I seem to remember, and I hadn't thought about it in a while, I think the representative, the state rep, I think she was a state rep that came here from Milwaukee. I think her name was Polly Williams. She came to visit, and we had a conversation. Now, mind you, this is like 20 years ago. And I hadn't thought about it until I'm telling you this. And at that time, they were using vouchers, and they were taking children, and they were able to put them in different schools. And I'm not sure if it was Catholic schools and charter schools at that time, but in some places it was. And so I'm only mentioning that because someone told me about a universal system now. So there's all these things that are coming down the pike that you're hearing about. I haven't seen any writing about it, but this system is really, really changing. And I know that I don't have all the answers, but I know that together we can make some serious, serious changes in Philadelphia. We can help. They're looking for solutions. And I think that with the minds that we have in Philadelphia, we can give them some solutions, because there are busing programs that are in effect, like they used to be, and they're busing children from different areas. And if you look at the seats that are being lost in local communities while the children are being bused, not even to mention the cost to bus children. I believe some children get school passes to go to school. That's a cost, too. And my thing is, if you're leaving the community, if our children have been leaving the community, and I asked this at a meeting, do you have any documentation that shows that our children are doing much better as a result of being bused outside of the community? Now, I haven't gotten the information back yet. But I'm really, really concerned about that, because we've had children, and I know people that I know personally who went out of the community because their parent or the guardian thought that they would do better. And when they graduated, it seemed that they didn't do any better than they would have had they stayed in their own community. They have jobs in local businesses just like, you know, other people do. It's not like they went away to college and they finished college and they're in a good, you know, job or career. It's not like that. So I'd like to see some statistics, and that's one of the things that I'm talking about. How many children are already being bused out of their community? If you bring them back, then they'll fill the seats in the schools in their community. You don't have to close their school. So there's a conversation about the area, the areas of the city where the schools are, you know, where they, and they said recommendations, so they're recommending that these schools be closed or children be moved from one school to another to fill up space. We have schools that that are underpopulated by so many hundreds of students that it's unbelievable. Now, my thing is, when our children come into the school, and I know for myself, when I go into a school and I have to go through that machine, I have to take my pocketbook and put it on the machine to go through and all of that, I wouldn't want that. If I had the opportunity to go to a school and I don't have to feel like I'm being searched every morning, I think I would opt for that. I would say, Mom or Grandma, you know what? I'd like to try something different. So, you know, I look at all of that, and I've been in schools where they don't have, a guard at the door, and they don't have to be searched and all of that stuff, or, you know, your stuff put through the machine. So, I mean, it's so many things to talk about, but one of the things that must be done, and I'm going to say it again, just like you said, we have to come together. There are a lot of groups all over the city that are involved in education. I mean, all over the city, but there has to be an effort for everybody to come together. Even at the School Reform Commission meetings, you don't see groups of blacks, you know, or black groups coming to the SRC meetings on a regular basis. And so that if that happens, I believe things will change here. Showing up makes a difference sometimes, because when you sit in there and you hear decisions that are made, you know, are being made on behalf of your community, it makes a difference. And anybody can sign up to speak at the SRC meeting. Everybody gets the same amount of time. It's 3 minutes, and you don't have to have a child in the school system to speak. And you certainly don't have to have a child in the school system, even if you don't want to speak, to come and sit and hear what's going on. But what I would do, you know, for anybody that doesn't have children, is to begin talking to children about education, about schools, because our children are not being engaged in conversation by us. Now, I know you wanted me to talk about the carbon monoxide, and I, you know, I know time is short, but I guess I needed to get that stuff in.
Well, before you do, let people know of the, because like you said, there's so many groups or organizations, and you, of course, wear so many hats, or as we say, galas, but tell folks the name of your, the group that you started some years ago and still have.
Well, the group is Mama Gail's Community Education Network, and we have people in our group, Mama Gail's Community Education Network. And if I might, can I give my number?
Sure.
Okay. My phone number is 215-476-1278. That's 215-476-1278. And we have people in our group that are doctors, are lawyers, carpenters. They teach driver's ed, people that are grandparents, people that are authors. You name it, just everybody, because that's what our community is, you know, it's everybody. And so we have people, and we come together, and we talk about education, and we talk about solutions. So this is the next step now, to create a solutions council. And it is very important now, because they have been having meetings and going around to the community and asking the community, What do you want? What do you think a school should look like? And asking all kinds of questions. And so for about 2 years, we have been going to meetings on the regular, but not knowing that this was going to happen. And so people gave their ideas. If we thought that this kind of thing was going to happen, then we not only would have given different answers, but we would have asked different questions as well.
Right.
One of the biggest things that happened in these meetings was you would come together and they would say, we're going to separate into groups. And so we began to say, no, we don't want to be separated. Let's stay in the auditorium or whatever the large room we were in. Let's stay because we wanted to hear what other people had to say. And so in the beginning, we were given comments. One man in particular said, he's no longer there, but he said that some people are more outspoken than others, so they wanted to give people that, you know, people, everybody an opportunity to speak. So they would break us into groups. And so what I realized was that some of the people didn't know what questions to ask. You know, some of the parents, some of the community people that would come out, they didn't know what to ask. They didn't know what to ask. They didn't know how to ask. But they came out because they were invited to be a part of something. And so being in the room together, you know, you hear questions and you hear people not only ask questions but make statements that you would not have heard if you were separated. So that's one of the things now. And I find even in groups that are meeting around education, they do the same thing. They, instead of staying in one large group and hearing what people are saying, They started to use the same kind of model that the school district is using, where they would break people into groups. Sometimes they separate, you know, people by schools. But for real, many of the issues are exactly the same.
Right.
Now, there's one thing that I want to mention that is a real, real concern of mine, and that is the levels that they're putting together. They're putting together K through 8 schools, the middle school, the K through 8. They have different models of schools that they're using. And I remember when my youngest daughter, who is now 36, when she was in elementary school, and she had just come in from private school, so I had several questions to ask that some of the other parents wouldn't have had. So when we went into the meeting and the district superintendent at the time was explaining to us that our children would not go to that school until sixth grade. They will only go to school there until fifth grade. Then they would go to another school, sixth, seventh, eighth, and then go to high school, ninth, 10th, 11th, 12th grade. So I raised my hand and I said to him, if this system doesn't work, do you have a time period set aside where you would go back to the system that you're using now? And he said to me, your question is so ludicrous, I'm not even going to answer you. Now,
wow.
Yeah. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And I wasn't used to people talking to me like that. And so that kind of sprung me into activism, for parents and children back then. Because I wasn't used to that. And that was the answer. It wasn't like, somebody else came behind and gave me an answer. And the reason why I'm mentioning it, because I ask often, how many children have we lost as a result of doing that? How many children have we lost as a result of just changing the grades? Now, we have schools that are not set up for the size eighth grade children that we have now. The eighth grade children, many of them are very large, and they should not be in a small, in a school that's set up for little ones. So we have schools where they're talking about K to 8, and we have concerns. There are people that have concerns about the bigger children going to school with the kindergartners. There are real concerns about that. And then we saw some of the schools where you have the bigger children, and they're in the K through 8 school, but the school was not for that. So it would have been like for sixth graders. And the sixth graders back then were much smaller than they are now. So there are different concerns about the grades. Some schools is K to this, and, I think we even saw a school, I think we may have seen in the whole list, like a couple of schools, I think they were saying, because we had different people looking at information. So I think it was like K to 4.
Right.
So it's these different model schools. Now, for some areas, some of them might work, but for many other areas, you don't want to mix these big children with these little children. And then, there is security. Teachers might not be paying attention. They may not have an NTA in the hall. So there are a lot of concerns. I was with someone the other day, and she was saying she had taken her son out because he's a little guy, and they had sent him to the restroom by himself. And I think he was in second grade. And so, there was a real concern about that, and I believe the young lady said he even had to go to a different floor. So I'm not sure. I wasn't there. But you hear stories about things, and it makes you have concern. And so we need people to talk to their neighbors. We need people to talk to their nieces and their nephews and their grandchildren and their children about their experiences. I've been talking to people out and about in the community. And I was at IHOP the other night, and I was speaking to a young man there who was the manager. And we began to have a conversation with him. It was three of us, and we had a conversation with him, and we were talking about the children being bused from North Philly to the Northeast. Well, he was bused from North Philly to the Northeast, and he said he went to the school feeling like he was a project. He felt that he was a project, and he said he didn't feel good about himself. He said they had a language, him and his friends, he had some friends that he palled up with, and he said they had a language that they spoke in the Northeast at the school, and they had a language that they spoke at Richard Allen Projects, where he came from. And he said his mother thought that going there, he would, you know, he would do better. He'd have a better experience in school. And he says he wishes that that he had gone to his local school, you know. And for him, you know, and children have different things in their head. And he said for him, you know, he wanted to go to the school that had the yard on the roof, because some of the older buildings, that's how they're made. You know, you go out to recess up on the roof. That's the way it used to be. Now, this young man is 37, and I spoke to a teacher last night or yesterday, and then I spoke to her later in the evening, and she's 48, and she was bused. She was bused, and she was saying that that's why she stands for the black children, because she knows what she went through being bused. And so, you know, I'm not trying to make this a race issue, but there's a lot of things that we need to be concerned about. And there's another thing, and that's the black males, the black male teachers in schools. That's, I mean, there's so many different issues. At the same time, if we're going to fix this thing, my thing is let's fix it. Let's put everything on the table and let's fix it. You know, not Band-Aids. And it's not always about money. They're saying it's money, money, money. It's not always about money at all. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's about how you're wasting money.
Okay. Well, with that said, and we know that this system, I mean, that's what they do. They generate all those monies, but then for the most part, especially when it comes to us and our community, it's really not only wasted, but, you know, it's just misappropriated or misused and all other kinds of things. Yeah. And at the same time, they then are able to generate what they want, you know, so... It's an ongoing saga, but let's move on with connecting the dots to what's going on in some of our schools as it pertains to some of the health issues and problems. You know, we know that public school, usually throughout the country, does not give us what, you know, is really the best that we should have. I mean, that goes without saying. But who would have expected that we would be confronted with having to deal with issues such as carbon monoxide?
Well, God knows I wasn't trying to deal with the issue, but it was one that was thrust upon my husband and my family. He works for the school district. He is a building engineer, and he's been there as a building engineer for 7 years at the school district. And last year in January, I tend to believe that it was the end of December, somewhere in December, but we didn't know. January and February is what we know he was being exposed to carbon monoxide, January and February. That's what we believe, that he was being exposed on a daily basis because it was a boiler that wasn't operating properly. And what happened was he was feeling sick daily, but he didn't know what was making him sick. He felt like he had the flu, And we had started going to the doctor, and he was saying, you know, he said, and he had never had the flu. He rarely gets sick. And he said, I think I have the flu because everybody, you know, has the flu. People are coughing and everything. So I think that's what it is. And then he was, and I hadn't seen it. I just was hearing him talk about it because when he'd come home, he'd be fine. He'd be very, very tired. But I didn't see, when I say fine, I didn't see the symptoms when he would come home, except he would be I don't know how to say this other than say he would get angry. He would get angry, like snapping, you know, like short-tempered is the way I would say it. And that's what I noticed. And then there were days that he would sweat profusely at home. I mean, he would just start sweating like crazy. So I saw that. But as it progressed, he thought he had food poisoning, so we started going to our doctor and just having tests done and just trying to find out what it was because he wasn't feeling any better. And then it progressed. And so when it progressed, he got really, really sick. And the way he explained it was what would take hours in the beginning took a matter of minutes, and he was gagging and gagging. And he said a voice told him to get out of there, to run up the steps, and he ran outside, and he was gagging. Excuse me, he was gagging and gagging, trying to catch his breath. And so he had spoke to someone who told him about this boiler and that what the reading was. So a mechanic came in and checked it and told him what the reading was. And based on the reading, the guy said to my husband, had you been down there for 20 minutes, you'd be dead. Well, my husband had been down there for 15 minutes that day.
Wow.
And he was saying that where it would take, you know, longer, he just got sick immediately. And so after reporting it, we went to the hospital because we had never experienced anything like that. We didn't know what to do or who to go to. So we went to immediately. He said, he called me. He said, I think I know what has been making me sick all these weeks. So we went to the doctor, and the doctor sent us right over to the emergency room, and they kept him overnight. But even with that experience, the way he was treated, it was, you know, in emergency, they did what they, you know, like normal tests and stuff, and they kept him overnight to watch him. But when I say the way he was treated, I came to get him when, when they were going to, sign him out. And I was standing, and they didn't know who I was. But the doctor that had attended to him was telling the elder doctor on a desk that she had, a man in the room, and he said he had been exposed to carbon monoxide. And the doctor said to her, and I'm trying to cut the story a little short, so forgive me. He said to her, so what does he want us to do? So what does he want? And I'm standing there because they didn't know that I was with him. And I'm, you know, I had, that shocked me. You know, and so my husband got sick in January, February, into March. And it was interesting because he's been sick all of these months since that. This thing is no joke when you're exposed, when you're exposed like this. It is a poisoning is what he experienced because it was a daily exposure. And so we went through awful weeks and months of this thing where he had awful headaches. He had pains across his chest. He had pain across his stomach, his up his shoulder, his back, his legs, his heart. It was just unbelievable, all the different symptoms that he was having from this. Oh, my goodness, he still doesn't sleep all night. You know, it is horrifying because I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what to expect because everybody that we went to really couldn't tell us anything. We went from doctor to doctor to doctor, and what happens is they treat the symptoms. And so this thing, because it gets this carbon monoxide gets in the blood, it attaches itself to the hemoglobin, so it goes throughout the body, so it affects the brain. He has short-term,
wow,
long-term memory loss.
Right.
And just different, just a lot of different symptoms. And what we're told, we were blessed to find a toxicologist in Baltimore that specializes in this. And so what we did was we learned what people need to know. And one of the things, if anybody suspects that they've suffered from carbon monoxide exposure or poisoning, they need to have arterial tests done. They will do the venous blood test, but they really need arterial tests to be done because that's where you can see what, you know, what's going on. And so,
right,
so it did affect my husband's heart. Two of the valves in his heart aren't operating properly. And thank God, this is the kind of thing we're told with oxygen that can be reversed. So he is taking oxygen every day. But had we known in the beginning, and if we had known, and he was put on oxygen in the hospital, we would have had different results, we believe. And what happens oftentimes is that they take people to the emergency room and they put them in the hyperbaric chamber. And this is what I learned from, you know, reading, and I did a lot of reading about this, and many people have many, many different symptoms, but what he developed was a hypersensitivity. So the reason why he would get agitated was sound was bothering him, lights were bothering him. It's this real sensitivity. So that's why he was snapping when it first started like this. And I learned that, you know, I learned later as we met Mr. Dene and he began to educate us about this thing. It is just amazing what it does to the body. He was so weak, and this man is very strong. He couldn't even pick up a case of water. It
wow.
really, really, really weakened him. He's not back to being able to do the kind of things that he was, you know, doing, but he's gotten stronger. He's able now to do, you know, to exercise. He couldn't exercise before because it was taking so much out of him. And, you know, where people were being treated with the hyperbaric chamber, when he did a test, and it may have done him even more harm had he been able to get the hyperbaric chamber. So, you know, people are so different, and this is something that I pray that people will study more because, you know, doctors, and they tell me the ones that know about it are the ones that treat people in the emergency room. But beyond that, and I talked to a doctor that treats people with the hyperbaric chamber, and I said to him, well, what happens, because I saw with my husband a couple of months he would have these symptoms, and then it looked like they would dissipate, and so they would come back again. So I talked to this doctor, and I asked him, I said, so when you treat patients with the hyperbaric chamber, and I said, when you treat them with the hyperbaric chamber, do they ever come back with the same symptoms again? And he said, yeah, sometimes they do. So I said, well, what do you do for that? And he said, we don't do anything. So, you know, it's this thing, you know, and it's something that needs to be studied. And I know from research that people die from it. So, you know, if you have exposure, that's one thing. But to have poisoning, that's a whole different thing. Like my husband was working 5 and 6 days a week you know, and so he was in it every day. And during that time, they were real busy, so he even worked overtime. So sometimes, you know, he was at the same school the whole day. So, you know, all I can say to people, if you suspect it, get online and begin to do research about it. Because we have people that have problems with heaters, anything gas. I mean, anything gas, like chimneys. Not having the chimneys cleaned, I heard about that. And then the generators, people have the generators, you know, too close to the house or, you know, something like that. And it's just different things. So I would say to people that were exposed to make sure that you ask for arterial blood tests to be done when you go, if you have to go to the hospital. And go online because there are a lot of people online, and they call them survivors, carbon monoxide survivor groups. And you can go online and get information, but there's so many symptoms. And, you know, with people smoking and with the cars and all of that, we're exposed to this stuff. And my husband wears a monitor now. And when he goes into the corner store, he says a lot of times the monitor goes up to number 5. Now, that's high. So that's just in the corner store where they're cooking, you know, with the stove. So they do have carbon monoxide detectors that you can have in your house. But for people that have had exposure, they have monitors that you can wear on your belt. And it's a lot of information. But we were lucky to find Albert Denae online. And I was looking for a black doctor at that time. And he's not black, but he was on a show with a black doctor. And I called him immediately after I heard it was a taped show, a radio show that was taped, and it was on the Internet. And I called him immediately. He's the expert. I don't call myself an expert in any way, but I know what we went through, and I know what he helped us through. And we could call this man day and night, and he would give us advice. And just a nice man and just willing to help. And he's experienced people going through this. And I believe his mother-in-law had carbon monoxide poisoning, and she got sick from it. I saw even Tourette syndrome. Somebody, I was reading the other day that I think it's women that have children, were pregnant when they were exposed. I just saw it on a website that even some cases they found that the children, I believe that's what they said, developed Tourette syndrome. But let me just run through this real quick about the carbon monoxide and related disorders.
We only have about 5 minutes left.
Okay, I'm going to say this real quick. Attention deficit disorder or ADHD, these are like symptoms. Anemia,
right.
Asthma, autism, or Asperger, blurred or painful vision, chronic fatigue syndrome, depression of any kind, dermatitis, diabetes, epilepsy, chronic muscle pain, heart disease of any kind, chest pain, irritable bowel syndrome, memory loss, or early Alzheimer's. These are the different symptoms. Valve prolapse, mitral valve prolapse, migraine or recurrent headaches, multiple chemical sensitivity, panic attacks, paranoia, fears, Parkinson's disease or Parkinsonism, joint disorders, temporal durable joint disorder, tinnitus or hearing noises inside the ears. These are like a bunch of symptoms. Right? These are a bunch of symptoms that people can have.
Right.
You know? So we don't know, but like I said, with the testing, there are arterial blood tests that can be done that can let people know exactly if a person has carbon monoxide in their blood. And we were blessed, you know, to find someone that could help us with that.
Well, in closing, I just want to add that
it's important that we bring these issues and these, really, these things that in our community we don't talk about it. We're not as familiar with it, but obviously it is something that is going on in our community. And if, in fact, this happened, well, no, if, the fact that it did happen in and at a school,
yeah,
a public school where there are children, and while your husband, of course, unfortunately, had a direct, interaction with this very toxic, very deadly gas, just think that some of that had to rise up into the building.
Yeah.
So, you know, so while, you know, it might not have been the same level or the same, potency, nevertheless, there still is some kind of residuals or some kind of, something that's going on. And so wouldn't that kind of give one an alert or alarm? And with that said, and I know we just have a few minutes, so we're going to have to talk about this again in the future, but as a result of this happening to your husband, Mama Gail, has there, in fact, been a change
that's come about in the school? Yeah, we met with the new superintendent, Dr. Height, right after he took his position. We met with him on a Tuesday, and on Thursday, carbon monoxide detectors were being installed because people were calling us, telling us that they were putting them in. What we are pushing for is legislation. I really, we got a little sidetracked, but I really want legislation that every school has carbon monoxide detectors in them, that the engineers wear monitors, because it could be anywhere in the building where there is gas.
Right.
So we're looking for that, but also having a city ordinance and then training, because people are not trained to know what to do. They are not trained to know what to do. And so that's what I'm pushing for, training, even in the school, not just the engineer, the principal. I'd love to have the staff, trained about how to move the children out of that, situation if it should arise. These are things to work on, and I every chance that I get, I push for that. They were supposed to have had a training last week, while school was out. They were supposed to have had a training. I'm not sure how much training they got, but that's something that the city, and as I go around, is something that we talk about. It is very important. I checked to see if they had their carbon monoxide detectors put in the buildings. And thus far, they told me all the schools have had them put in. Now the question is, where did you put them? Where did you put them? Has the engineer had the training that they need to have to keep everybody safe? So it's, even though it just happened to my husband, believe me, I've been out front about it, because I don't want anybody's family to have to suffer, and I've been saying that. And since then, there was one school where children were taken out, and we were told that it wasn't carbon monoxide, but I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was, but we have to take safety measures so that people, whether it's children or adults, that everybody is safe in these buildings.
Wow. That's it, Mama Gail. Please give out your email address and telephone number one more time.
Pia, P-I-A, is my new email address. It's pia.heal, H-E-A-L, at Gmail. So that's Pia, P-I-A, dot heal, H-E-A-L, at gmail.com. And my phone number is 215-476-1278. That's 215-476-1278. And if anybody wants to help, please, every school in the city is supposed to have a school advisory council. anybody from the community can be on a school advisory council in their community. Business people, community people are welcome and supposed to be on that board. If you have children in the school or grandchildren that you're responsible for, there is a place for you at the table in an advisory capacity. So ask about the school advisory council.
All right. All right, family. Well, we thank all of you for tuning in to this segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. And, of course, we've been talking with Mama Gail Cloughton. And remember, if you don't have a community advisory committee in your community, hey, maybe you need to start one.
Call me. If they don't have one, call me. Yeah.
All right.
Peace and love.
All right.
Thank you.
Again, we thank Mama Gail. We thank all of you for tuning in to this segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. Again, it is now the fifth day of Kwanzaa. And we hope that you all have enjoyed your Kwanzaa thus far, and we certainly encourage you to continue to deal with the spirit of Kwanzaa year-round, 365-plus. Again, thank you, Mama Gail, and we know we'll be in touch real soon. All right, family. Hopefully we can get Brother Razakhan on next week to give us his report on what's going on in the present, and particularly, of course, what we now see is some very interesting occurrences, things that we knew were happening, but we're kind of really seeing it now. But at any rate, Habori Gani to you all, Pomoja to the Shinda. And tomorrow, if you're in the Philadelphia area, of course, Dr. Marlana Karinga will be in Philadelphia at the Impotep Charter School. Again, Habori Gani.
To regret to the ancestors before libation to give thanks for the future generation is Kwanzaa. Number one, emotion, unity, to strive for and maintain unity in the family, community, nation, and race. Number two, Uchu Chakalia, self-determination, to define and name ourselves. Creating space for ourselves instead of having others define it or determine our paths or selves. Number three, Uchiha, collective work and responsibility to come together to build and maintain our community, to carry our brothers and sisters' problems and together solve them. Four, Ujamaa, cooperative economics. To come together to build and maintain our own stores, shops, and other businesses, and to profit from them together. Number five, vision, purpose. To make as our collective vocation the building and developing of our community in order to restore our people to their traditional greatness. Rule number six, creativity. To always do as much as we can in the way we can. In order to leave our community more beautiful and beneficial than when we inherited it. Principle number seven, be modest, faith, to believe with all our hearts in our people, our parents, our teachers, our leaders, and the righteousness and victory of our struggle. Happy Kwanzaa.
Happy Kwanzaa.
We give peace and thanks to Dr. Marlena Karinga.